Welcome to the Modern Woodworkers Association, a podcast about woodworking from folk who woodwork. Woodworking is what we do, who we are, and what we like to talk about. So join us as we have a drink, sit around, and talk woodworking.
Hi, welcome to episode 173 of the Modern Woodworkers Association podcast. I'm Sean Wisniewski of the Corner Workshop, and I'm here as usual with my co-host, Diami Plotke of the Penultimate Woodshop. And tonight we're talking to Chris Gochner. If you attend Fine Woodworking Live, you'll get a chance to meet him in person. How about that?
Look forward to that.
There you
That's
go.
Why I signed up.
There it is. So, Chris, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing real well.
Good.
Appreciate the chance to be with you guys.
Oh, no, yeah, I'm glad you came on.
Absolutely. Well, let's dive right in. Diami, we've been on a slight unplanned hiatus, but what you got going on in your shop?
Long-time listeners will know I'm working on an entertainment center. And over the weekend, it was warm enough that I could actually drag it out in my driveway and get back to work.
Is it warm? You lucky dog.
It snowed last Wednesday or Thursday. On Sunday afternoon, it was in the low 50s, and then it snowed again on Tuesday. So, I was home. It was Sunday afternoon, and it was warm enough to go outside. So I took one of the four slabs that make the shelves out, and what I had last done to them in the fall, really, before it got too cold, I was cranking the heater in the shop, so maybe it was like December, is I'd done all the pore filling on the top surface because the vertical grain timber strand has so many pores. So they all had this nice coat of epoxy across the top. Like I used a scraper to kind of scrape them off, but still they're coated in epoxy. So I spent the afternoon figuring out what the regimen was to get the epoxy coating off. And what I finally worked out was if I go over it with my 4-inch belt sander with 50 grit paper, and then I go over it with a 6-inch Rotex in Rotex mode with 50 grit paper, and then I went over it with a 6-inch random orbit sander with 60 grit paper, I end up with a scratch-free, epoxy-free surface that I can then sand normally.
So that's the ultimate object here is to get away any epoxy film that you have built up and get it back to the epoxy-filled but timber strand surface.
Exactly. Okay. Anywhere that's wood, I want it to be bare wood. All the voids, I want to be filled with epoxy flush with the adjoining bare wood. And I'm going to say that about 90% of the little pockets of epoxy are flush with the wood. Because sometimes you do an epoxy fill and if you scrape it off, by the time it dries, it shrinks a little bit and it ends up shallow relative to the adjoining surface. I think I went heavy enough and I sanded enough that there's only a handful of spots where it's not completely flush. And as I live with this project longer and longer and am emotionally done with it, and I'm still only about halfway done building it, what I've come to realize is that on the bottom three shelves, if 80% of the epoxy fill is flush and 20% is just a little bit dipped down, it doesn't really matter because they're going to have more shelves on top of them. You're not going to get crazy looking at them. The very top one, I may end up doing a second coat of epoxy surfacing so that I ensure that it's all glass smooth. But it's really only the top one that I'm going to go crazy on.
Yeah, see, in all this time when you were talking about epoxy coating the end grain timber strand that you've created, I totally envisioned it being a epoxy colored top, not just the voids. I don't know why.
Well, the top will get dyed, so the whole top will get colored.
Oh, because you're going to dye it even after this.
Exactly. Once I'm done with all this sanding and epoxy removal, the next step will be to dye it.
Okay. Man. It's a long process.
Yeah. We're now 14 months into the build, so...
And those longtime listeners that may remember that this project spans damn near the length of your shop.
Yeah. It's a big project, but I don't mean to sound like I never work. It's 14 months because the four shelves are 20 inches wide, an inch and a half thick, and 12 foot long, and I have a one-car garage shop, so they're there have been many times when I've had other things going on and I literally just carry them down to the basement and leave them down there for months without working on them. But now that they're in the shop again, they're again serving as the desk while I podcast, and there's not much to be done in the shop while they're in the shop. So hopefully I will just put my head down and get them done before I move on to other things.
There you go. And so when I saw you posted an image of your kind of battle plan to get epoxy off the tools and stuff you use, how much sandpaper are you going through, even at 40, 50 grit?
Well, it took me some trial and error to figure out what the right grits were. But now that I'm on the correct grit, I was able to do one full surface, 20 inches by 12 foot, on a single pad on each of the machines. So I suspect I'll get multiple shelves out of the individual pads. It's really not chewing through the pads that much. Now, that being said, this is the flat surface where the epoxy was left relatively smooth. I have a bullnose around the three outside edges, and that I went much thicker on the epoxy, and it's almost sharp when you run your hand across it. So I haven't begun to sand that yet, and I suspect that that will chew through paper much more than the flat surface does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that bullnose is going to be a treat to deal with, I guess.
Oh, yes.
Keeping it in its profile.
Yeah, that's going to be the trick, is to not mess up the shape and just keep it that bullnose.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Well, that beats me, because as is all too often the case, I haven't done much of anything.
Did you finish that floor vent you were recessing into the wood floor?
No, I didn't. I need to. And that means the door's still kind of free swinging on its rail, instead of being any, there's no tension on the bottom to keep it from swinging outward. And in fact, I turned my knee into it the other day and swung it about 6 inches away from the wall, which was all fun.
It was nice when it banged back against the wall.
Well, and no, I stopped it from coming back. I knew it quick enough, but yeah, it's, that's just been put on the side. And that project didn't go in the plan I wanted it to from the get-go, by the anxiety of a teenager to move into his new room and other factors, and winter coming, so the whole thing where I didn't mud that wall yet.
Oh, geez, okay.
So there's much more to do, but the family's keeping me extra busy. So sadly, I got nothing.
Well, hopefully Chris has a lot more going on. What are you working on these days, Chris?
Dig me out of this hole. What's going on?
Well, okay, I've been busy. What I do is somewhat mixed. I teach at a community college, probably 30 hours a week.
Oh, you teach that consistently?
Yeah, I've got two classes. The day class goes from 8:30 to 1:30 each day. Well, actually, Monday and Wednesday, and then Tuesday and Thursdays I go from 6 to 10 at night. So quite a bit of time out there. I actually do some private instructing at my shop. I've got three private students that come over each week for 4 hours. So that's another 12 hours. With whatever time's left, I do some writing with Fine Woodworking. I just got finished with a series of workshops. The last 3 weeks, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I've taught some hand tool workshops where we built a shaker sewing table, stock prep with machines. But after that, it was just all done by hand. And so I had 14 students the first week, 9 the second, and then this past weekend, I do it at my own shop, which is reasonably small. I had 4 students there. So 30 so shaker sewing tables over the last 3 weeks.
Do you build one yourself during each class?
Although I only get it so far, but I've got probably 2 or 3 of those in the works that I'll finish up here in the next few weeks. What else? So I seem to do quite a bit with the private students. In the past little bit, we've done one of the students has wrapped up a chest of drawers, bathroom vanity.
When a private student comes to you, are they bringing the project?
Yeah. Yeah. They kind of build what they want to build. I mean, a lot of them have actually started off building a workbench. Okay. That seems to be one of the first things we do is we build a workbench because they typically have their own shops as well. One of them did a nice wall-mounted tool cabinet, and now he's just doing furnishings and so forth for his home. I did also wrap up, this is something I worked on the past 4 or so months, a real neat kind of mid-century modern sideboard out of gumwood and walnut. I wish you had images of it. I don't even have any posted on my website, but a beautiful piece, a lot of fun to build it.
I can imagine what walnut looks like. What does gumwood look like?
Oh, gumwood is amazing. If you get out here, well, where I pick it up, they call it figured gum.
Okay.
It's not figured as in curly or quilted or anything like that. It just has an extreme color variation. It gets whites and reds and golds and browns and purples. It's really quite amazing wood. It can be a little bit unpredictable, a little unstable, but I do find that the amazing beauty of it justifies the hassles associated with working it. But it complements cherry nicely. It complements walnut nicely. It almost works probably with any wood because it's got so much diversity in color.
Okay.
So, been busy and enjoying what I'm doing.
You have to. It's.
Oh yeah, it's hardly work.
That's pretty phenomenal. So we've got you on here tonight because we want to talk to you, but also because you are going to be attending Fine Woodworking Live, as I mentioned in your greeting. And so now is a good time to plug that event, I suppose. Okay. Fine Woodworking Live coming. I hope everybody's going to go that can. April 20th to the 22nd out there in Southbridge, Massachusetts. I'm sadly not going to be able to attend, but I know Diami will be there, and there's a couple of guys that we've been able to talk to that we're familiar with that are going to be there. So a good time as always. Diami,
I'm pretty sure I've roped Kyle into being our roving reporter.
Yes. He's a good bald substitute for Texas for me.
You're about the same height.
We are.
Both short, Chris.
Yeah. I get it.
I know you got it.
I hear it all the time. I'm not that short, damn it. But so, Chris, before we get into that, what you're going to be doing there, mm-hmm. a little base background. You're teaching a ton. Is that what got you into this?
No.
Okay, so
into woodworking, you're saying?
Well, or? I mean, not yeah. Well, we might ask that a little later, more specifically. But yeah, like I guess, how did you get into the teaching aspect? Because it seems like that's a good majority of what you're doing.
Well, I mean, I've been woodworking 33, 35 years, pretty much all I've done since college. Really for the first many years, 20, 25, I did commissioned furniture. Really self-taught, but started out with real simple things, for family, friends, and branched out. I've really done no advertising in the 30 years. Everything I've really ever built has been word of mouth.
Wow. But
yeah, it was commissions for the longest time. Commissions are difficult because every piece is reinventing the wheel. You know, they'll supply you a drawing or an image or something, and you just have to figure out how to build it. And through the course of doing that, year after year, you really become a problem solver. And I guess after, I don't know, it was maybe 15 years, I really learned a lot from the Fine Woodworking magazine. You know, I stand by the fact that I basically taught myself woodworking through the pages of Fine Woodworking. Nowadays, it's a little bit different with the internet and all the stuff that's out there. But back in the day, it was basically just reading books or magazines and then doing it yourself. Mm-hmm. But they always touted themselves as a reader-written magazine and welcomed submissions. And so one, I had done an interesting French armoire that was held together with wooden pegs, and it could be broken down by removing the pegs and transported piece by piece. And it was fun to build and somewhat interesting because it was large, but could be, you know, moved easily into tight quarters. So I pitched that article to them. And they, to my good fortune, liked the idea, and we went ahead with that. And that was sort of my connection entry into fine woodworking, and it's been a great relationship for maybe close to 20 years now. Probably after 20 years or so woodworking, I was teaching a class at my shop. One of the students that took it worked at Salt Lake Community College in the wood shop. They have a shop technician, and he happened to take the class, and he said, you know, you ought to go out to the college and talk to them about teaching a class. And again, that was probably 16 or so years ago. And therefore I've been teaching out there ever since. And it's a great facility. Just thoroughly enjoy associating with the students, getting them excited about things. But just bit by bit, I've transitioned a little bit away from the custom work, more into teaching and writing and that kind of stuff. But I like to keep myself fresh and current with things, and therefore every now and again I'll build something to my liking, like this sideboard that was recently completed.
Excellent. So so then we'll push that right into Fine Woodworking Live. What then, with all that experience, are you going to be teaching or talking through at FW Live?
Okay. I believe my class is titled Joinery Planes. So it will be hand planes associated with joinery, which I break that down into a couple groups. There are planes for fitting joinery and planes for cutting or executing joinery. Typically in my day-to-day work, I rely on hand planes a lot for fitting because I am a big machine advocate, although I love hand tools and hand planes and that kind of thing. For trying to make a living at it for 30 so years, you do whatever is efficient. And mm-hmm. and therefore, I'm very versed with machines and their virtues and assets. But I also feel that there's real strength in knowing hand tools and hand techniques, and blending the two together, you're at your best. So the workshop back there is going to be focused on joinery planes. I'll throw out a few by name. Rabbit or a Philister plane. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that typically is to cut the rabbit. Mm-hmm. We'll have a plow plane for producing grooves. A router plane can be used for fitting, say a tenon, for example, or maybe trimming a dado. It excels actually at producing stopped grooves. In the shaker sewing table, we use some stopped grooves to house the drawer bottom, and the router is the tool for that. Where the plow plane can do the through grooves, the router's capable of doing stopped grooves. Dovetail planes, we on the sewing table we use dovetail planes. It has 3 feet that go into a turned column. We actually cut the dovetails with the dovetail plane. I recently wrapped up a video with Fine Woodworking. Mm-hmm. It was on building an infilled shaker cabinet by hand. And again, that has a variety of sliding dovetails, and they were executed with the dovetail plane. So I find that they're really useful, and they do a great job.
Besides the romanticism of them, and I can appreciate why it's a good topic for a class. If you get back to building for production and building commissions, how often are you, I know that there are many situations where they are simply the most efficient way, but would you use that entire variety, or do you end up doing a lot of joinery by machine?
Well, So, yeah, interestingly, yeah. Here's what I say. My ability to use hand tools and my knowledge of hand tools makes me a better power tool woodworker. It makes me just a better artisan, a better craftsman in general. If I'm going to cut a rabbit, no, I don't use a rabbit plane. I also say that my vocation is woodworking and my avocation is woodworking. Okay. So, the vocation is going to be where I'm making a living at it. The avocation is where I'm doing it for fun. And if I could do it exclusively for fun, I'd be doing it exclusively by hand, because I find it extremely satisfying and rewarding. And like I say, I'll be building these, wrapping up these sewing tables by hand, and I'll be using all of these. But it's because I enjoy it, but it also just makes me a better artisan, a better craftsman. But let's look at some of those. So no, I'm not going to cut rabbits with a philister. I'm not going to plow grooves with a plow plane. I'm not going to do stop grooves probably with a router. Dovetail, I would probably take an exception there. If I had to do a sliding dovetail shelf, I would definitely do it with a dovetail plane, a crosscut saw, and not a router.
Okay.
I stand by the fact that I think, maybe if I was building 10 of these things, I might gear up. But if I was doing one, I could definitely knock the sliding dovetails quicker with a plane and a carcass saw and chisels. And I honestly stand by that. Dovetails, another thing, although that's not really associated with planes. I do have the lead dovetail jig. I've not used it in 10 years. All the dovetails I cut are by hand. They might take a little bit more time. I enjoy the process. I've messed up a whole, this probably doesn't sound great for, yeah, I don't like the screaming noise of the router. I seem to always have those things break loose on me and shift and screw everything up. I find doing it by hand, you have little slight mishaps or gaps, but they're all manageable. With a router, it's sort of major stuff where you sort of build the whole thing again. So yeah, my dovetailing is all done by hand. Whether it's a, 8 or 9 drawer dresser or a blanket chest, anything like that. Fitting is another story. I use the shoulder plane day in and day out, a skew block plane, shooting plane. So planes for fitting, smoothing, trimming. I was with a student today and we were trimming a piece that she had put on. I was kind of giving her a hand, and it just took seconds to do it. And I made the comment to her. I said, "What machine or what could have been used to take care of that as quickly and as well?" And honestly, I don't. The alternative. It was an assembled piece, so it couldn't go to a machine. It would have to be a belt sand or an orbit sand or something like that.
Okay.
So I just think if you become proficient with hand tools, they just will serve you so well. And I understand the operative word there is proficient, because I see a lot of people that struggle with them and they fight them and they get discouraged with them. But if you invest the time and you pay your dues, you stick with it, they will earn their keep in the workshop every time.
Absolutely. And I think, at least personally, what you're describing is doing the work that has small tolerances with the hand tools. And it sounds like you're still doing your rough breakdowns with power tools. And I think that so many people fall into that let the machine do the grunt work and then enjoy the more accurate and slower finesse of the handwork. And by slower, I only mean with a plane, you can take individual shavings to fine tune that. Whereas with a saw, you're never going to get a cut as fine as that one shaving.
Yeah. So it's, like I say, it's just an understanding of the strengths of all that you have at your disposal and taking advantage of whether it's a machine or hand tools or skills and being the best you can that way.
Yeah. And going back to your comment of that you've messed up some, and haven't we all, That's the mark of a true craftsman, is being able to fix or repair or hide their mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. But yeah, it should be a lot of fun. The workshop back there. We'll look at some combination planes, dado planes, match planes. match planes are for doing tongue and groove, and that's one that could honestly earn its keep in lieu of a router or table saw setup. Those things will knock tongue and groove joints out, or match joints, just in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fun to boot. So
I'm so bummed I'm missing this, because it's so right up my alley.
So should be fun. We'll clearly show what they do. We'll show how to get them to work for you.
Okay.
I at this workshop I did a couple of weeks ago, a student had purchased a new Lee Valley rabbit plane.
Okay.
And because I send out a tool list, and they're welcome to bring the tools of their choosing, if they have them or if they want to acquire them. And so it was a brand new plane, and he had set it up and was using it, and it just wasn't working that well. And he brought it to me and kind of showed me, and he was getting a lot of shavings hung up on the scoring cutter. And my assessment from that was that it was doing too much work. It was sort of sticking out too far in relation to the blade. And if he brought the two into alignment, then the blade would do its job, the scoring cutter would do its job. And after a little bit of adjustment, he just said, man, that was like night and day. And I think half the time is people just don't completely understand what aspect of these tools, or what each of the components needs to do and where it needs to be. And once you're able to dial them in, then so we'll at the workshop, we'll clearly show how they, what they do, how they do it, and how to get them to do it by dialing all the components in.
So can I, the variety of specialized planes you're describing is well beyond the basic bench planes that I typically use. While I understand there is an art to setting up a plane in general, it sounds like just knowing how to set up a plane isn't necessarily enough when you get into the more specialized tools that each have their own nuances in terms of setup.
Yeah, and that's true. Like I said, the rabbit planes or philisters, where you've got the fence, the depth stop, the scoring cutter, the skewed blade, all that has to work in harmony. And it takes some time to get it dialed in. Once it's dialed in, it just works like, something else. But I think, there's probably a number of people that don't quite get there and get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Combination planes would be another thing. You've got to get the blades just set correctly and oriented correctly. And if they're not, they don't work. If they are, they work extremely well. I'd say, setting up a bench plane where you basically have the lateral adjuster to dial it in and the vertical adjuster to set it, those are fairly straightforward. But when you get into, a dovetail plane can be a little bit finicky. So typically, when I do these workshops, I bring a gamut of all these tools. Students typically bring their chisels, their bench planes, and I provide most of the specialty planes.
Okay.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And it's not nice getting ready, because I got a lot of sharpening.
No, yeah, it's set up from your aspect.
But yeah,
do you keep a close eye on those, just to make sure they're
yes,
all the care that you put into them isn't wasted, quickly.
Actually, we do have that discussion. Yes, respecting tools.
Yeah. Cradle it as if it was your new floor.
Yes.
And lay it down softly, edge up, please. That kind of stuff. Oh yeah.
I say it. It's why communism failed. Actually, I see that at the community college, because we have communal tools, and they're actually nice tools. We've got 10 Lee Nielsen saws. We've got shoulder plant. We've got nice tools.
Uh huh.
But nobody's invested, you know. They'll grab the sharpest one, you know, rather than go sharpen it. They'll
right.
take all the block planes, they'll look at the blades, find the sharpest one, and go use it.
And when that's no longer the sharpest, they can move on to the next one.
Yeah. And so I think there's something about being invested in your own equipment, because you take care of it, you value it, it always works for you. And so, you know, in a communal setting, hand tools struggle. You know, machine mm-hmm. tools seem to do okay in a community setting, but hand tools are something that really need to be tuned and respected and but at the workshops, not everybody's able to come up with all these. So we provide them and we ask them to take as good a care as they can.
Yeah, hopefully most of them do.
No. And I've actually never lost a tool.
That's great.
So they all come home, they all come back, and for the most part, they're really respected. So I appreciate that.
I just have to say, like, I attended community college, and I don't know that there was anything near a woodworking course of any sort anywhere mm-hmm. on campus. That is incredibly cool.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that your area, the craft is thriving. I mean, there's work to be found with that kind of education.
Yeah. And a lot of them actually just happen to be people that are interested in woodworking. You know, I'd say the greater percentage are people that are just there because they love woodworking and not that they're pursuing it as a vocation, although there are those too.
Okay.
But yeah, the facility out at Salt Lake Community College is just amazing. I mean, I don't know that I've ever been in a shop as well outfitted as that. I mean, it's honestly, so it's enjoyable to be there, be a part of the program.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So besides teaching and building items as part of the classes you're making, such as the sewing desks, I've seen on your gallery and your website, you've made desks and chests of drawers, tables, chairs. I know you make some skateboards. Left to your own devices, making anything you want, what is your design and building mentality go towards? What do you want to make?
I'm not sure I ever know. I always work solid wood. Occasionally I do veneering.
I believe your skateboards are made of veneer, aren't they?
Yeah. They vary. Some of them are done with a veneered top skin, but a lot of time it's more like a decorative butcher block that's cut into veneer, and then it's laminated with 16th maple so you can get contour and stuff to mm-hmm. it. And I do veneering, and I love the beauty and the variety that you can get in veneer. But for the most part, I like solid wood. I like traditional joinery, mortise and tenon, dovetail. I like to do solid wood throughout. And as far as style goes, I've typically been drawn to, you know, Shaker, Arts and Crafts, or a kind of contemporary blend on both of those traditions. I'm currently drawn a little bit to the mid-century modern, and I think that's a little bit the direction I'm taking things now, mm-hmm. as I know a lot of people are. So I kind of never really know what's next. I'm actually thinking about that currently, and I don't have an answer, but I know I'm going to be building something kind of fun and enjoyable in the near future.
Well, the nice thing about the craft is almost anything is fun and enjoyable.
Yeah. Especially if you're able to pick and do it for yourself. I mean, I always enjoyed the commissions, but sometimes it was just, you know, it was what you were asked to do. It's what the client or the designer or the architect wanted.
Right.
But I always did enjoy it. I mean, I can't really say that I can't think of a job that I did that I wasn't invested in and wasn't enjoying the process. But now where I'm not so reliant on commissions, I'm able to do a little bit of my own stuff. I do find that is really enjoyable. I can really take the time I want to just get it as I want, because mm-hmm. there's no deadline. There's no, I got a funny text the other day, that called me back to my days of commissioned woodwork. It was like, I want a kitchen table that's the size of two church tables. and then they said, and what's your backlog? I'm hoping to have it done in a month for a party. and I just thought, yeah, that harkens back to the days of commissions, you know, where it's always very sort of vague and elusive what they want, but they know they want it soon because there's a party.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but you know, that's okay. It's work, and they're coming to you out of respect for what you do. So, but on that one, I had to pass. But I did send it on. I do have friends that do a lot of commissioned work, and I sent it on to a good friend of mine, and I suspect he'll likely build it. He replied to me that he talked to her, and they had a better understanding of when it could actually be delivered.
So. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, that harkens back to when I was building homes and we'd get plans from the architect, and it was always, yeah, that doesn't physically happen in real life. You can't do what you want it to look like because you didn't think about the connections that need to be made to build that thing. It's just an unrealistic disconnect.
Yeah, actually, going, you know what? I know exactly what I remember an architect giving me this table base, and I looked at it and I'm like,
you can't do that.
I have no idea. How you're going to do that, how someone's going to do that. In fact, I'm working with a student at the college right now, a gal who's building a chair, kind of a, an easy chair. I don't know what to call it, but it'll have some upholstery in it, but it's a wooden frame with some upholstery and wooden legs. But a friend of hers sent her the design, and as she's built it, she's come to realize that he didn't have to solve the problem. You know, and I agree with her. Is like, yeah, it looks easy on paper and very doable. When you actually get into building it, you see all of these compromises or these decisions that have to be made.
Right.
And it's just been eye-opening to her, and it sort of harkened back to me how, yeah, that's very much how it happens. They'll send you kind of a concept, but you have to make it. You have to make it work.
Mm-hmm. It's where the problem solving is where it's at.
Yeah. Hopefully you solve them before you get too far.
Yeah. You figure it out before you dive over too far.
So.
All right.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to go into what you're going into, Sean.
Well, I think that, you know, fantastic discussion will just put us right into our fortnightly beer choices for the episode. Anything can go right into fortnightly beer choices.
Such a choice.
I can start. I ran to the store on my way home this evening and just picked up Magic Hat, which I think is pretty all around.
It's distributed over here. I want to say it's nationwide.
But I've never seen this before. It's the TFG, what they call a rock solid IPA. I don't know why they call it TFG, but it's just a basic, you know, 6.6 IBU or 66 IBU, 6.6%. Good even IPA, not too harsh, not too bad.
Okay.
I like it. Comes in a can.
Doesn't all Magic Hat?
You know what? Yes, probably. I don't drink a ton of it, but.
All right. Well, my choice only comes in a growler.
Sure.
So touche. Dogfish Head makes a lot of my favorite beers, and they bottle a 75-minute. And the bottled 75-minute is 60-minute and 90-minute mixed together with a touch of syrup that sweetens it just a little bit. And while it's not bad, I've always preferred just mixing two bottles on my own. Mm-hmm. So I was driving up the east coast of the country a couple weeks ago, and I stopped at the Dogfish Head Ale House in Falls Church, Virginia, where they serve Ale House 75. Now, Alehouse 75 is 60-minute, 90-minute mixed at the tap with nothing added. There's no syrup in it.
Okay.
So I was able to get a growler of Alehouse 75 and bring it home. And it is just like you'd expect, making it out of two bottles on your kitchen counter, except it's a little bit fresher. So it was very nice to enjoy.
No, you've talked about that before when I've had the 60-90, I think. And I think I may have even blended the two at some point. But, yeah, getting them tap fresh, blended, that'd be nice. What kind of syrup do they put in their other one? Is it maple syrup or a simple syrup?
I think
syrup
it's maple, but off the top of head, I don't know. You'd have to look at a bottle. Honestly, I don't buy the bottles of 75 anymore because I like mixing the two myself better than that. But if you see, it's one of the big bottles they sell. If you see the bottle, it will say.
No. Oh, okay. I'll look for it. Chris, how about you?
Well, I'll probably not be able to help you out here.
No, you're fine.
Diami mentioned, earlier when we communicated that, you'd want a beer choice, but, being that I don't drink alcohol, I'm probably not able to give you a good suggestion there.
Hopefully so in the email, beverage will do.
You're not the first and you won't be the last. Don't worry.
And you know, and I don't actually drink soda. I certainly don't drink energy. I don't need energy drinks. So I'm going to have to say, how about a nice cool glass of water?
Heck yeah.
That's a popular choice lately.
Oh, yes. I used to drink soda. And since I enjoy my meals so much more. It used to be that the sodas just kind of killed everything. I'd get full on them. I didn't enjoy the meal. Since I just drink water, I find myself just really cherishing the food. And so I'm happy with a nice glass of water because I don't know what I'm missing, but.
No, it's not about that. It's what you actually need. We're just poisoning ourselves with things that we don't need. That's the truth.
To enjoy it. So I'm all for that.
So before we get out of here, Chris, where can people find you on social media?
Oh, well.
or on the internet or anywhere.
Or maybe in a print magazine somewhere.
Or in a magazine, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a dinosaur, as I think Diami found. My wife was able to set us up here for this communication. I've never really delved into social media much. I mean, if you go to my website, it's, you know, I don't keep it current. I honestly put in serious days. I mean, my Tuesdays and Thursdays started about, well, they used to start at 5 a.m. Lately, it's been about more like 7, and I am not done until 10 at night. Ooh. So, you know, sometimes 15 to 17-hour days, typically probably a 12-hour day. And it's not drudgery. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy it. But when I get home, I just want to
be done,
you know. Yeah. And so I don't spend a lot of time in social media. I really don't even go to social media, you know, much to look. I just spend most of my time doing, you know, building, helping. I do love writing. You know, I've enjoyed my collaboration with Fine Woodworking. They've been really good to me. I do a bit of teaching. I teach at Mark Adams School of Woodworking. I've been there close to maybe 20 years. I really enjoy that. This video, I guess I've done a little bit of work with Fine Woodworking via video, but this Enfield cabinet should be somewhat extensive. Spent a week filming that, so I'm excited to see how that comes to play. But I wish I could be more helpful on social media. One of these days, maybe. But
if someone wants to see,
there's no requirement.
Yeah, and if someone wants to see your work beyond looking at the articles you've done with Fine Woodworking, your website is chrisgochner.com.
Yeah, and I do have to give me a week or so, and I'll update that with some of my more current work. But yeah, they can find stuff there.
All right,
excellent. Well, that just about wraps up the show for now. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play Music. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. There, you'll be sure to never miss any of our exciting episodes. While you're there, leave us a review.
And thank you for listening to the Modern Woodworkers Association. If you like the show, be sure to visit modernwoodworkersassociation.com. Follow the MWA on Twitter at MWA_national. You can like the MWA on Facebook or follow MWA underscore podcast on Instagram. And the best thing you could do is tell a friend, because word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.
And if you're just finding us now, go find that us on Instagram and see the images that Diami posted of our the calendar that we did years ago.
All I was doing there was trolling Wood Talk.
Which it's awesome though, because it got a lot of responses and it's too funny to look back at that stuff. That was what, 4 years ago?
I think it's a 2014 calendar. Something
Like
that.
So this year, well, it would have been 2013 when it was done. But anyway, so I'm Sean Wisniewski of the Corner Workshop. I'm at SeanW78 on most social medias and just by my name on Facebook.
And I'm Diami Plotke of the Modern Woodworkers Association. I'm at Diami Plotke on Twitter and Penultimate Woodshop on Instagram. And head out to your shop, find a nice piece of wood, coat it in epoxy, and sand it off.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you both. Thanks.